You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, Dr. Ron here. Welcome to the very first Tech Talk Radio Summer Series for 2009. Well, this is exciting. I've been put in charge of the radio station and even left to program the music. Thanks for the vote of confidence, everybody. Now, the Summer Series is when the panel takes a well-deserved break over the Christmas holidays. In Australia, it's a summer holiday. In case you're wondering why we've all gone mad, if you're listening to us somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere and you're freezing to death, we'll be showcasing highlights from this year's action-packed season. We'll be revisiting some of the best views from the couch. We'll be hearing from Lyd and Matthew and all the overseas regulars. All you have to do is remember to switch on the wireless or press play on your iPod. Now this week, we'll be hearing from Susan McLean, cyber safety expert on all things related to child safety online, and the proposed controversial net filter. And then we'll be hearing all about digital photography with Michelle Lawrence. Don't forget you can always discuss interesting things you've heard on the program at our web forum, which is forum.techtalkradio.com.au. And of course, our website has all the links to everything you'll ever need, including our personal blogs and information about how to follow us on Twitter. And that website is www.techtalkradio.com.au. Now, I'll be back a little bit later, but for now, it's on with the show.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Susan McLean is no stranger to Tech Talk Radio. She's been in a previous occasion, probably about 2 years ago.
Would be about two years ago.
Yeah. Anyway, Susan back then was a member of Victoria Police, and she was heading up the cyber issues in our schools about bullying and harassment and all those sorts of other interesting things. We've run her program over our summer breaks. And still gets lots and lots of interesting news and questions about it. And so she joins us again today. She's wearing a different hat this time. She's got rid of the old blue one, and she's now out there cyber safety advisor for her own business and consulting and doing all those sorts of things, which I think is a very amicable thing in this day and age of doing it for yourself. Welcome back to the Tech Talk Radio studio, Susan.
Good evening. Sorry, I'm in the wrong time zone.
Oh, well, there could be someone listening to us. There normally is on the other side of the world. So tell me, cyber security, we haven't spoken to you for about 2 years or so. What's changed, if anything at all? I would have been guessing things are probably getting a little bit worse than better at the moment.
They are getting worse, and I think the sheer volume of young people in particular that have access to technology and the internet has grown out of all proportion to what it was 2 years ago.
Now, we've been talking about Twitter and Facebook. Facebook was around when you were in last, but Twitter's new. Twitter's microblogging. Twitter is designed to be connected to your phone via SMS and the likes, and people can, or should I say anyone can actually send a text to Twitter, and it comes out on everybody else's devices in a lot of respects. What impact is that having in the world of social?
I think that it's only really starting to have an impact here. I spent 5 weeks in the UK over Christmas, and every single minute of the day on radio, there was a Twitter update from someone or someone reporting on something that had happened on Twitter. Mm-hmm. At that point in time in January, it really hadn't taken off here as much as it had in the UK. Since I've been back, yes, you hear about it all the time. But I think people, to my knowledge at the moment, haven't really been misusing it in the same way that they're misusing some of the other applications.
Because of the small text size in Twitter, do you think it's still likely to be exploited for bullying or something like that?
Absolutely. There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
You're an idiot. It's only three words. It'll fit.
And you can predispose that. You put that in your presets in your phone. And the thing is that the kids in the classrooms that have those under the benches, and when the teacher goes out, we'll quickly into text, and that could be detrimental to anyone who receives, I would have thought. So.
Absolutely. And people sort of think that, well, what is cyberbullying and should I really be concerned? But You know, in the old days, people do get bullied and harassed, and there's no doubt about it, but the perversive nature that is cyberbullying is really bad. And I think that the community as a whole has to get away from the fact that when you hear the term bullying, people seem to think, oh, it's just a school thing. It doesn't really matter. Kids will grow out of it, you know, get on with life. But when it comes through via an SMS or it's posted online or it's on YouTube or it's on Facebook or MySpace or any other social networking, it's there to stay. And it's adults will say, well, don't read it or delete it and then you won't see it, or don't read your text messages or turn your phone off. But they're adult concepts. They're not concepts that really gel with the generation of today. They want to be connected 24/7. It's how they've been brought up. So we have to make sure that they have the skills and knowledge to deal with these problems. And also we need to educate people about correct behaviours online. You know, cyberspace is no different to the real world. There are rules, there are laws, but they're just not that well known.
How are we going in educational forums, such as in primary schools, in secondary schools with teachers and social workers within those environments? Are they catching up with what's going on out there?
They're trying to. And I think if you speak to any school principal anywhere in Australia, they will tell you the number one problem confronting them from a school perspective is cyber harassment of their students. 99.9% if it doesn't happen at school, because they have pretty good filtering systems at school. And look, I know anyone can type, you know, get Facebook at school and, you know, they can bypass the filters and things like that. But predominantly, the peer bullying is occurring at night or after school.
Peer bullying and night, you mean like as in after hours on their personal mobiles and emails and things?
And even on say, a school laptop computer, but it's happening out of the school environment. It becomes a school problem because the next day at school, the poor year-level coordinator or the welfare person spends all day running around trying to work out who said what to whom, and who's at fault, and you've got to, you know, you've got to, I've had situations where kids have refused to come to school because they're fearful of what occurred at night. They come to school and the rumours are spreading. So you can't just say it's not our problem or try and push the buck sideways. It's a community problem. And unless everyone tackles it, we are going to have major problems.
You say community problem. That means politicians are becoming involved in that sort of thing as well. What's going on in our hallowed halls of cabinet rooms? Are they starting to develop policies and things?
The hallowed halls of our cabinet rooms, I think the wheels turn very, very slowly there. Mm. And I think that's a problem with everything to do with cyber safety. The technology is exploding. It is moving forward at such a fast rate that by the time anything is sorted out, policy-wise, legislation-wise, it's been and gone. They've missed the boat.
Do you think some of our ministers are actually being a little bit, how should I say, distracted by other things as opposed to looking after cyber bullying? Because you look at what Conroy's doing at the moment, the Minister for Communications and everything else that he's in charge of, because of the broadband thing, because of the internet filtering and every other thing that falls under his portfolio, do you think that cyber bullying is not given the attention that it really deserves these days?
I think immediately use the term bullying in any context, people immediately think, oh, it's just a little school thing. It doesn't really impact upon anyone and it's not really that important. And I think that, yes, there are some revolting and inappropriate websites out there. There are young people that are solicited and groomed online, without a doubt. But the cyberbullying and harassment that I see on a day-to-day basis is horrendous.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Is there a technical solution to this or is there other ways to solve it?
Look, there are technical solutions in that you can block certain things on your computer. Your parents could put keylogger software on to monitor every keystroke that, you know, you type in. You can set up a Google alert on your child to see, you know, where they might pop up in cyberspace. But realistically, and what I've learned from my studies in America and some studies I've done in the UK, is that it's all about education. We have to try and prevent this from happening in the first place rather than running around trying to pick up the pieces afterwards.
Okay, now you've got my respect.
So Susan, what you're saying is... You've passed.
I passed the test.
What you're saying is that it's not the answer then for the government just to introduce a national net filter, and that's not going to be the be-all and end-all for
absolutely
to curb cyberbullying.
No. And look, if you look at the fact that the government, just before the last federal election, put out free internet filters for Australia, All Australian families, I think, could access two or three.
That's right. And they could filters. Be downloaded free of charge. And if yes, you thought that was an appropriate thing to do, you could install it on your home computer.
And you could even write away for it or ring up for it if you couldn't manage to download it.
And how successful was that
system? I think
system?
The uptake of that was in around 5% of internet users actually took up that offer.
And it was terrible software.
And it was, and you know, young Tom Woods from Melbourne managed to crack it in a very short period of time.
So what's to say that any internet filtering can't be broken by Tom Woods as well? Like, it looks like, as I think one of Grant Hackett, I think it was, one of the ISP people, probably, I think he's a swimmer, but someone came out from one of the ISPs and said basically, yeah, we're trying to protect kids, but they don't want to be protected. They want to be able to hack this sort of thing, and that's what they do, more so for a challenge, really.
It would become a challenge to them. I mean, if you put a challenge in front of any child for anything, you know, forget technology, if you ban something or say no,
or you say this can't be done.
It can't be done. There will
be
a child
out there. Challenge.
Yeah. Yeah,
watch
me. That can do it. And, you know, there is merit in what they're trying to do. How realistic is it? I don't know. I don't really think it is going to be hugely successful. I mean, I know the blacklist was leaked. There's something like 2,000+ websites on it. If you think about it, 2,000+ out of how many million websites are out there?
Which change every day.
And most or a lot of the really revolting stuff that you want to prevent your kids from seeing is available on file sharing applications and peer-to-peer networks. They're not websites. They're not going to be covered in this filter blockout.
So you were saying before that, and rightly so, that saying to someone, just don't log into your email or don't check your SMSs, isn't really preventing anything. It's blinkering you from what's happening out in the community. And as you said, you get to school and the rumours are already out there,
yep.
So you may as well know
well,
about it in
seen
advance.
The photos.
So what's the basis of the education program? Is it technology specific, or are they very general messages about bullying is bad and you're bullying someone if you do such and such?
No, I think that we really need to start to teach our young people cyber safety education. When I was in the UK at Christmas time, it is now mandatory for all primary schools to include cyber safety education in the curriculum.
It's up there with road safety, I would have thought.
Well, you know, we teach kids about road safety. You know, the green light means go and the red light means stop. We teach them about safe party, drugs and alcohol. It's a community safety issue. This is new. You know, it wasn't around when we were kids. It wasn't around, you know, 10 plus years ago. But it is a new emerging concern and we have to deal with it. Education has to start from things as simple as what is a search engine? Because the way the kids think is they will understand what Google is or whatever they're using. They know they type the word they're looking for into it and they press enter. And then they always will click on number one because one is the best. You know, it might not be number one that you want. It might be number five because if you've chosen sperm whale as your mammal of choice for your grade four project, I guarantee you number one might not be what you're looking for. Or if you type in Barbie dolls to see what Mattel's bringing out for Christmas, there's a fair bit that the first few really aren't going to be Mattel.com. But kids aren't even taught that. They're not taught about what the technology is that they're using. So until they've got that basic knowledge, then they need skills to be able to deal with it. I'm not a fan of some of these sanitised social networking sites that kids engage in that have someone moderating the site. And
yeah, they're supposedly monitored or moderated.
Yeah, because they're not real-world experiences. Yep. Kids don't want to be on that. They want to be out in the real world. So if they're going to be there, we have to give them the skills as best we can to try and give them the knowledge so that they can make good decisions. Yes, I've typed in something. There's something horrible on my computer. I need to go and tell mum and dad. I'm being bullied and harassed online. I need to go and tell someone because we know from studies in America that around 80% of young people will not tell a parent or teacher if they're harassed online or they have a negative experience because the typical parental response is, I'll just disconnect it. I'll take it away from you. And that will solve the problem.
But is that the underlying problem that we're seeing these days, that a lot of parents are either inexperienced or don't want to know about it or think it's a school problem?
I think it's a combination of the three. Speak to any year-level coordinator in a school and they will tell you about the parent that's been up on the Monday morning saying, you know, Johnny Jones from the next class said something nasty to my daughter. What are you going to do about it? The fact that, you know, their daughter perhaps had the computer in the bedroom, which is an absolute no-no, and has been on it till 2 a.m. unsupervised, you know, I'd be looking at
that may be a contributing factor. Yeah.
Parental responsibility there.
Absolutely.
And it's hard being a parent. And, you know, it's not one of the easiest jobs in the world. And for a parent, the internet and technology is the only thing that they have to share with their children where they can't call on their own knowledge to help out because it didn't exist when they were kids. So no matter how good you can bake a scone or drive a car or ride a bike, you can't share that with your children. You can't. And it's frightening because kids will fob off their parents. You're dumb, you're stupid, you don't know. Go away, it's private. My kids say that to me all the time. Hi, kids, yes, I got your message. I'll just wave to you again. But, you know, they will try that on. They don't get very far with me, but for a lot of parents, it is frightening. Where do they learn about technology? From the media. Are there ever any good news Facebook stories out there? No. So they don't come feeling confident and comfortable about technology.
Indeed. And you're exactly right, because you can draw on your own experiences as a parent from when you were the same age as your children. But when it comes to technology such as the internet and computers and text messaging, mobile phones, it's developing at such an incredible rate. And the fact that it wasn't at the same stage of development when we were kids, then yeah, it does pose a very big issue for parents, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think they feel really disempowered to deal with it.
Are schools actually identifying this by and large, and are they... They're being proactive about introducing these sorts of education programs, Susan?
They are, and, you know, I do a lot of work in primary schools, secondary schools. I work in classrooms with the students, provide education sessions for parents, and also do professional development for teachers. And they are coming to the, I suppose, the awareness that they really have to jump on board. They can't just push it under the table and go, it's not really our problem.
I was going to ask that. Are they really surprised at the level that cyberbullying and this sort of taunting using technology is occurring? Does it leave them going, oh, gee, I never knew it was that bad?
I don't think teachers have that opinion at all. I think they're very au fait with the level of it because they're dealing with it every day. It's more the wider community and parents. The amount of parents that will say to me, oh, my child wouldn't know what Facebook was, or my child wouldn't have the ability to do this. Well, I'm sorry, but they will.
All right. So if a parent finds themselves in a situation where they suspect that their child is being bullied from afar by technology, what should they do? What should they look out for?
You need to be monitoring what your child is doing online, first and foremost. So you need to be aware if they're spending excessive amounts of time online, if their online time is, you know, do they leave the computer happy? Are they sad? Are they very secretive of what they're doing online? But primarily you've got to trust your children to come to you if they've got a problem. You need to, and there's some simple steps you can do. You can block the sender if it's someone that's bothering you. You can block them if they're on MSN. You can delete them out of your Hotmail. Don't engage in argy-bargy back and forth because kids will say, oh, but they started it or they said it first, so therefore that gives me approval to be mean and nasty back. Get out of the conversation immediately and go and tell an adult about what's going on. Parents are often afraid. They have no technical skill. But I say to them, you don't need technical skill. You don't need to know how to wireless network your house. That's what you've got kids for. You do have the ability to know right from wrong and good from bad, and you can help your kids that way.
So do you encourage parents to get in touch with schools and talk about this sort of what's going on, or directly to other parents? Or
no, never directly contact another parent. That's, mm-hmm. you know, rule number one, because in any situation that tends to inflame the situation. If it's school-based, and look, most bullying is by someone a child knows. If we're looking at sexual solicitation and grooming, it tends to be someone that the child has met online. But the bullying tends to be someone they know that, or the child knows of. They may be logged on as, you know, naughty girl hot stuff, and they might not know that that's Jenny Smith, but it will essentially be someone they know. So if it's school-based, it's important that with any problem with your child, you tell the school. My daughter or my son is having problems online and I believe it's this person. I just want to let you know, not fix it or it's your problem, but we need to work
open
together.
Dialogue and just
yes,
talk about
because
it.
Because the teacher's probably seen in the classroom that all of a sudden the social cohesiveness of the class has gone out the door and is wondering why there's two warring factions in the classroom. So it's important with anything that's going on that you let the school know.
Susan, how cooperative are the social networks themselves in helping to resolve these types of issues?
Interesting question. Look, they will tell you that they are...
We're all about naming names here, so yes, go to town.
They are right... No, they will tell you that they protect kids' privacy.
Yep. We hear that all the time, though, don't we?
They do. Listen, and the prime example, if I just move off social networking, is games, online games. Kids playing online games. Parents go, oh, it's a game. A game in their mind is something safe and fun to play. Little do they know that little Johnny's chatting to random strangers all around the world. You go on to Club Penguin. It's a popular game for kids. It is now owned by Disney. How safe can you really get? If you go into Tell Me About This Game for the parent, it says Club Penguin is a safe place for your child to talk to other children.
But how is it safe? What steps are they taking
that's
to make
exactly
it safe?
That's exactly right, because
how
I
do they
play,
prove they're other children?
That's right. I play Club Penguin. You know, am I an 8-year-old? I don't think so. So they tell you this and the parent reads it and goes, oh, that's really good. But they don't actually understand that anyone can be anyone online. The problem with MySpace and Facebook, the legitimate social networking sites are quite good. The problem we have is that we are in Australia. So if we need to actually access those records, it's a very convoluted process of warrants.
When you're talking about records, you're talking about technical records of who's online at what times.
Yes, and who said what to whom and yep. what's been posted and what's been said yep. and things like that. So that must by law, and Facebook and MySpace are from the USA, must be kept. And if law enforcement agencies all around the world serve them with a warrant, the information must be presented.
But that sounds to me like an incredibly bureaucratic process to have to go through
and
to
consuming.
Access information, where you should just be able to contact them informally and say, my daughter was logged on last night, she was chatting to a person who identified themselves as this, I don't want them to be able to talk to each other, can you block them? Or
and look, they won't. It's not as simple as that. And as part from the fact that the process is convoluted, it is costly.
Absolutely.
So
yep.
there is no way that law enforcement agencies all around Australia are going to fork out large sums of money for, you know, me calling someone a fat cow online, even if it is 57 times. Each of the applications, though, to their credit, do have a report abuse icon where you can email them and say, you know, I'm Mrs. Smith and I've got this problem, or I know that Johnny Jones is online and he's only 10, but he's pretended to be 69, because that's a really popular age for kids to be on social networking. And they are meant to deal with it.
Mm.
They do, often 6 or 8 weeks down the track. They will tell you that they do it. They have a 10-day turnaround.
It probably goes into their email inbox with everything else, and they deal with 20 of the 5,000 outstanding requests every day, and they just get to it when they get to it.
And look, that I've had people from MySpace tell me, you know, oh, 2-3-day turnaround. You know, we will guarantee this. I get, when I was in the police force, Mrs. Citizen meeting saying, 6 weeks ago I sent an email about an issue and then nothing's happened. Could you help me out?
Send an email to who? The social network themselves.
Yes, to say I have an issue.
Yep.
Interestingly, though, YouTube used to be quite good, because as a principal of a school, you used to be able to email YouTube and say, look, there's images there online that, you know, of two kids in my school fighting. Could you please remove them? They've actually removed that that application. And now the only people that can ask for things to be removed off YouTube are if you are actually in the footage. So a principal that's got concerns about what's online can't even contact them and say, this has occurred, it's been posted, could you please remove it? You've got to get one of the kids that were fighting or someone that was doing the wrong thing to contact them, which I think is a backward step.
So you look at what we're seeing online today. I guess you mentioned it, or you touched on it briefly, kids like being older than what they say they are, and those who are interested in grooming our kids like to say they're younger than who they say they are. And there seems to be no safe haven online where you can really guarantee the fact that only school kids, I guess, are in that environment or in that chat. So it really does fall back onto adults to watch, monitor, and keep an eye on what kids are doing. Now, that's all good and fine when it's a computer in the living room of
the
house.
Which is where it should be.
Yeah, and I think I'm of that age where I've got young girls coming up, and I know there's a few others in the room at the same age as well. And we have our computers in the living room. But the thing is, there's this mobile technology that's out there now in respect to PDAs and notebooks and things like that. And the schools like having kids having these things at an early age for their educational development. So once again, they're moving away from being able to, like these little notebooks, and there's several in the studio here in front of us.
Very easy to hide under the
exactly
doona.
At night, just pop it under the bed, you know, and you can be sitting as an adult. You can go, what's that noise down the hallway? And you get down there, and someone's tapping around on a computer. Yeah. So not that we've got to that yet in our household, but
or you get the beep beep. Beep, beep, yep. Which is the MSN coming
but,
in all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's the mobile devices, the old hand-me-down handset that mum and dad have given them and all that sort of stuff.
My mobile phone's an internet terminal.
Yeah, and that's so mine.
Exactly. So you can be communicating with people, whether it's SMS or MMS or email or even instant messaging. You can be doing that from the palm of your hand. Doesn't take much
stuff. And to add to the mix, something that's near and dear to Adam's heart is Latitude, because he was very concerned about linking Latitude up with social networking sites to show the physical whereabouts of where people are. Now, Dr. Ron, you and I have tried this in recent times, and it's pretty accurate to the, you know, couple of hundred metres from where you are.
Well, a couple of hundred metres if you're using a phone network. If you're using inbuilt GPS in the phone, it's accurate to within
five
metres.
Or 10.
That's
yeah.
scary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this is the new sort of level of cyberbullying that I guess there's going to be. There'll be groups of people where the friends at school log into the one environment and they'll show their whereabouts.
Where they are. And you said and then, you weren't seeing this person anymore, but you were because you're at their house last night because
yeah,
I saw
right.
you on Google Latitude.
Adults have the sense to know whether or not to use this technology and who to share
it
with.
Kids don't.
Kids don't. And it's not a technology thing. It's just a life experience, common sense thing. They don't have the common sense to think, well, maybe it's not good to tell all of these people where I am all the time. Maybe I should use some discretion here.
But what the kids will say, too, is that, oh, I just met my friends to see it. You know, they've put it onto the World Wide Web. Think about what that actually stands for. But it was just there for my friends. And we also know that brain development for a female doesn't conclude till around the age of 20. And for a male, it's closer to the age of 30. The last part of an adolescent's brain to develop is the bit that covers their ability to perceive risk and make good decisions.
That would explain a lot.
So I mean, and that's a medical fact. So, you know, these kids are struggling in many areas, not because they're dumb and stupid, just simply because they aren't developed. They don't have life experiences and they don't have a lot of common sense. They want to be popular. They want to be doing what everyone else is doing. And it gets down to, I think, especially with the small devices, having some really strong rules in your household about what's acceptable. Do these devices get put on the kitchen bench at 10 o'clock every night? You know, does the wireless network get turned off at 10 o'clock every night? Yes, you can have your computer, but the wireless network won't be on. You know, but, you know, it's very tricky.
It's common sense in a lot of respects to parents to do those sort of things too.
So it sounds like it's the same old problems just from a new technological angle, but the solutions are still the same sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Taking an interest in what your children do and helping them develop some common sense.
And so many parents will I'll say to them, do you ever go online with your children? Oh, no, I don't do that. Do you take them to the football? Yes. Do you kick a footy with them? Yes. Walk the dog? Yes. They do everything else with their kids, but they don't get online, chat to them on MSN, set up a social networking site with them. Many, many parents don't even know that there's parental controls on gaming consoles. Do they know that you can access Google through your Wii on your television? You know, it's just about making sure that people are aware of what's going on out there.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Joining us in the studio this evening is Susan McLean, cyber safety advisor with 27 years experience in law enforcement. So we might take a break in a moment. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about this topic. If you have a question, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's lots of people at the moment. One person saying, if my mum sent a friend request, I would not accept it. You know, that's probably one of the other things that mums have got going for. Anyway, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
cast your mind back to the 90s.
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Anyway, I went in there and that...
Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going to talk about...
Somebody rings me every day at the moment to want to change my light globes.
If that's it, it was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. good. Glad to clear the air on that one.
Yes, it's out there.
Out there.
Yeah,
as Mulder would say.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
Use this down to your bones. And before I knew I had shiny skin and I felt easy being clean like him, I thought this one knows better than I do. A triangle trying to squeeze through a circle. He tried to cut me so I'd fit. And doesn't that sound familiar? Doesn't that hit too close to home? The way things could have gone. And doesn't that feel peculiar when everyone wants a little more? So that I do remember to never go that far. Could you leave me with a scar? So the next one came with a bag of treats. She smelled like sugar and spoke like told me don't trust them, trust me. Then she pulled in my stitches one by one, looked at my insides, clicking her tongue, and said this will all have to come undone. A triangle trying to squeeze through a circle. She tried to blunt me so I'd fit. Doesn't that sound familiar? Doesn't that hit too close to her? The way things could have gone. And doesn't it feel peculiar when everyone wants a little more? So that I do remember to never go that far. Could you leave me with a scar? Just in time, although my old self was hard to find. You can bathe me in your finest wine, but I'll never give you mine. Cause I'm a little bit tired of fearing that I'll be the bad fruit nobody buys. Tell me, did you think we'd all dream the same? And doesn't that sound familiar? Doesn't that hit too close to home? Doesn't that make you shiver the way things could have gone? And doesn't it feel peculiar when everyone wants a little more? So that I do remember to never go that far. Could you leave me with the sky? Could you leave me with the sky?
Tell us about your new toy.
This is the one that occupies the room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
So you've got to work around for the Android market now for your Android.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines?
Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is back up.
Backups, for goodness sake. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
During the break, the show continues off air as you would expect. We were talking a little bit about the filtering system that the federal government's looking at rolling out in the not too distant future, and the list that's become available either for right or wrong, but nonetheless, it's out there now. Susan, what's your thoughts on what the government's trying to do with this wonderful filtering mechanism that they're going to try and legislate, but now they can't? And is it just Well, you tell us. What are your thoughts about it?
Look, I think it's got merit, and I think the thought processes behind it come from the heart, and it's right, because there's certainly stuff out there that young people shouldn't have access to, because we know that they can be psychologically damaged. However, in reality, I don't think it will work. And I don't think that out of the hundreds of millions of websites that are out there, the small number that will make the blacklist will make any difference whatsoever. And especially when you consider a lot of the inappropriate material is available on peer-to-peer networks or file-sharing applications.
So it would be fair to say that they're well-intentioned, Susan, but misguided.
I think so, yes.
Conroy reckons he wants to hit the peer-to-peer networks as well, but I don't like his chances. I think he's
all
talk.
I don't think he's got any hope whatsoever.
All talk. It's going to snowball out of control. If he thinks that he's going to be doing that and he's going to be banning individual IP addresses, then good luck. If he thinks he's going to be banning whole subnets and then whole networks, then good luck. He's just going
but
to
these
end
sites
up
move. They're like, yeah.
Well, this is the problem. It's not
here
a
here today, gone tomorrow.
Absolutely,
it's not a problem that can be solved with a technological solution.
And that's how one of the people who are on the filtering list who shouldn't be there. I think it was a dentist in Queensland. The reason why they were on the list is because they got hacked a couple of years ago.
And they had objectionable content on their site.
Someone was using their site to host pornography. That's been cleared up. They're still on the list when they shouldn't be. So obviously the current list they've got's not even being maintained properly. So what makes you think they can do a bigger one better?
I can give you a first-hand example of that. We do some web maintenance for a company here in town, which is a legal firm, and they were hacked recently as well. Now, this isn't your average small legal firm. These guys are representing fairly major players in today's corporate world. And it's just a simple back door. Someone had managed to sneak one of those nasty sites onto the back of their web host. So we had to basically move the website from where it was hosted in the United States back to Australia, because the American sites seem to be hacked quite easily. And I guess that's how people can be put onto these lists. If someone's inadvertently put something nasty on the back door of a fairly reputable website, that's it for them. And then where does that leave them in that respect to their business? So,
and there's no appeal process because you're not even told that you're on it.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Sorry, how's the scones there? Your wife has made some wonderful scones there.
They're very good. I'm trying to talk through one right now.
Next, his phone will ring. You watch. Break the golden rules of radio.
That's the one.
All right. And of course, people are being put on these lists with no right of reply or anything like that. But is Mr. Conroy becoming the minister for censorship, as a lot of people are starting to talk about in the mainstream media? And of course, with the fake Mr. Conroy's coming out, well, that's just going to antagonise everybody. So where to from here? We've got this the software that the government put online for us, which I think you said before, Susan, only 5% of people managed, or there's very small uptake of it. Yep. Is this cyber filter, this online filter, trying to replace that because no one wanted it? Or do you think we're just a bit of a stubborn election promise? I think Conroy's his heart's in the right place, but I just think he's really fighting an uphill battle. And now what's happened is we've got this list come out in public, which has probably gone the wrong way for him. It's really becoming, oh, well, see, you weren't getting it right anyway. You've got...
No, so why bother?
Yeah.
And I think the examples of the boarding candle and the dentist are perfect examples of how, you know, simple names can actually be linked in to inappropriate content, because it's not as simple as, you know, all the nasty websites out there don't have the typical words in their name.
They're not all called nasty.com.
No, or, you know, childpornography.com. You know, if it was as simple as that, you know, problem solved. But they're called things that you won't even think of. So unless someone physically finds them, reports them, then it gets assessed, then it makes the blacklist. By that stage, they've moved on. Mm. And I know I had conversations with ACMA last year or the year before. And at that stage, they weren't being proactive. They were responding if someone said, have a look at this, I think it's inappropriate. But they didn't even have the ability to go out and look for inappropriate stuff to add to the list. Mm.
So let's look about the legal ramifications here in this country. In Australia, can you run a website which is otherwise untoward, or is that against the law? And can who is it ACMA that prosecutes you, or is it the federal police that prosecutes you?
Federal police. ACMA are the agency that look after the ratings and the content and things like that. So anything that's hosted in Australia is quite easy, and I use the word in inverted commas, to deal with.
So who should, if a parent comes across something which is obviously looking at them as Australian, what do they do? Do they ring the federal police?
Contact on the ACMA website. There's actually a place where you can report inappropriate content. So you basically fill out an online reporting form and you email it off, and then they generate a job number from it, and they actually have a look at it and see what's there.
Now, people think ACMA's a bit of a toothless tiger. I recently reported a spammer on because I was really getting annoyed at someone sending me some email. They were Australian. I reported them to ACMA, and they dealt with it. I was really, really impressed, and they did it very quickly as well. So they're jumping onto it.
But how much of your spam comes from Australia?
Well, not much, but
here's
the ones,
one hand, and I'm sure you can count it on it.
Absolutely, but you look at people like Optus who are spamming. You look at other people like that, who, and they've been caught. And I guess that's a message to people that are thinking. Because how easy is it to set up a website and put up some pictures and stuff like that? It's not hard.
In the ocean.
It is. It is. But then again, we need, I think as Eugene Kaspersky has alluded to on the course of the program when we had him, we need, you know, the Interpol of policing for internet usage where they all talk together and they can all globally do it.
But they all want to be Interpol. Conroy thinks he's Interpol. He thinks he's Superman. I'm not sure.
Sadly, he gets confused, isn't he?
There is VGT, which is the Virtual Global Task Force, which is an international group of law enforcement agencies to which the Australian Federal Police belong. And they were formed to try and be more cooperative when it came to dealing with large-scale investigations that were multinational and in all different countries. They tend, however, to only deal with high-level child pornography, or as I would prefer to say, images of child abuse rather than use the term pornography, because that almost, you know, legitimises what people are looking at.
Mm. How does Australia compare with other countries in respect to this situation? Are Australians less, are they more educated? Do they know the rights and wrongs compared to others? No,
I don't think so. And I think, you know, Australia is geographically isolated. So I think...
Oh, but not technically,
but what I was going to say is that... So for every other single thing, we are behind the eight ball. We're slow. We get things afterwards. People have that mindset that, yes, it happens in America, it happens in England, therefore it doesn't happen to us. But as you said, and I was about to say, technology is just like one world above us. So there's no little borders up on the side of Australia that, you know, everything that we do in cyberspace sits above us here, and then what someone does in New Zealand sits above them there. People don't understand that. They think, oh, that was America, or that was England, or that was somewhere else. And they're not actually understanding the concept of what the World Wide Web is.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, I think a lot of parents don't realise that once it's on the internet, it's normally there to stay, unless you've got incredibly magical, mystical powers.
Talking about...
You can't.
Caged on Google.
Absolutely.
Yeah, talking about images and such things.
And text as well. You put up a page, pull it down 5 minutes later... If the Google bots come past and scanned it, it will stay in the Google cache for a long time.
Yeah. So
Wayback Machine's another one.
Oh, that's a beautiful site, that one, I think.
But people don't actually understand the permanent nature of cyberspace. They think, I mean, I'll say, you know, I can delete stuff off my computer without even my finger going near the delete button. It just magically disappears because I have no technical skill. But I also know that if I do delete something, I'm not really deleting it. And kids in particular, young girls, that post almost pornographic images of themselves into their social networking pages, or the young girls in particular that send a naked or semi-naked photo of themselves to their boyfriend who loves them dearly and will not share it with anyone till tomorrow. He just forgets to tell them that. You know,
but what
it
about
is major, major, major issues.
But what about the Photoshop issues, the malicious issues where you get a head from someone at school and you post it onto a naked body and then email it around the place? You know, like that's where people have deliberately, intentionally gone out to get
something. But you know what? That doesn't happen that much.
Kids don't know how to use Photoshop yet, obviously.
Oh, come on.
That's what I'd be doing if I was a kid.
But do you know what? There are enough naked or semi-naked images of young girls out there within their school
community.
But
as a form of bullying, you could take the face of someone you wanted to bully. Yeah. Put it on the head of a naked body and send it to people.
If they do that, they tend, however, to put it on the body of a gorilla or something that is revoltingly bad. Not pornography, no.
Get an imagination, kids, come on. Oops, I should leave now.
All right. So,
great advice there.
Where to from here, Susan? Like, you've obviously been doing this for a long period of time. Is there any magical solution, any magical cure, anything that really springs to mind, or is it really just a matter of educating students and kids and the community in general?
The community in general need to be educated. Parents need to have the confidence to deal with the problems in their home and to set some boundaries and some ground rules and to understand. You know, when their children are playing an online game, there's a fair bit, if they're connected to the internet, they are engaging with people all around the world. Skype. Oh, you know, I have to have Skype on my computer because my son said so. He wants to talk to his friend in the next street. And no, he doesn't actually really need it because the search facility is probably still there and who knows who's going to pop up and talk to your child there. There's a range of things, but it's about awareness raising and getting people to really understand the issues. And education is the key. The studies all around the world show that proactive, preventative education is the way to go. You will never, ever catch every bad person out there in any area. So you might as well try and prevent the problems before they arise, if you can.
And a government blacklist, Susan, is not going to stop people from connecting to each other on Skype.
No, not
at
all.
It's not going to stop people from getting into chat rooms. Not going to stop people from exchanging details on MSN Messenger.
No.
So is there a portal, a web page, documentation, anywhere parents can go to sort of learn more about how to look and see
look,
and deal with things? Is
there anything...
The ACMA has a pretty good page, I think.
ACMA do have a website. I think it's all called Cyber Smart Kids.
That's the one.
There are many, many, many web pages out there to help parents learn about the internet. The problem for most parents is they don't know what's good and what's bad, because if you've got a base knowledge of zero, you don't know how to, you know, cull something that's sensible or not. So, you know, when I do presentations, I hand out a list of about 10 that are legitimate, good, up-to-date sites where parents can go and get more information. CEOP, which is a site out of the UK, has a really good parent internet newsletter that you can sign up for, and every month they'll send you an update. Great, simple stuff, tips, practical knowledge, but written in the way that most parents can understand.
How do you spell that?
What site was that? Yes, CEOP, was it?
CEOP, C-E-O-P .co.uk. .co.uk.
No worries. All right. That's good. I think people can probably Google a few things and probably get some decent help. The search engines, having spoken to Microsoft in particular and also Google, they are very aware of these problems. And I think chat on our little chat room before was saying the examples you gave earlier, Google are right onto it. They actually gave Wikipedia results about those certain things that, you know, you were looking for. So I think the search engines are starting to play a major role in preventing kids online, even with images. Yeah. I know, for example, with Microsoft's Live Image Search, that they have a three-process image sort of filtering system where they look for flesh and skin tones, they look for all that sort of thing. So,
oh, really? So,
yeah. Where were you when he was in?
But no. Those sort of companies are wanting to be seen as good corporate
citizens,
basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Google has Safe Search on by default. You have to switch it off if you want
to. And I think that's a damn fine thing too.
Yeah.
So,
Warlock's just given us a quick update in the chat room there. Ceop.gov.uk is the address we were referring to a few moments ago. Thank you, Warlock.
All right, Susan, you're doing some stints with SBS's Insight program at the moment, which is going to be on a television set, what, next week or the week
next
after or something?
Next Tuesday night.
Okay, so we can learn a little bit more about that.
Got a whole show on the internet filtering.
Okay, so that's
debacle.
Good. Put that in your diary for everyone wanting to have a bit of a look at that. And there's going to be some interviews with some dentists and some dog, Maroochydore dogs.
Some dog breeders or something.
Or
yes, and they've got the cyber hacker Tom Wood is going to be on talking about his ideas as well. And
that's all good. I think the good thing about all this is that we're now starting to talk about it in the mainstream media and on television. Obviously, Insight's a fairly respected program, so it'll be very interesting to watch. What are you doing, Susan? Are you doing lectures, or are you just doing the circuits of the schools and things like that?
No, I basically am out for tender. Anyone that wants to book me for a presentation.
Spruik your wares. What do they do?
My company is called SAL Consultants. They can contact me at salconsultants@hotmail.com, and I can send them an information pack on my background, what I offer, conferences, teacher
you'll
PDs.
Go and talk to them at nights and things like that,
do
or
parent, yep. Parent education sessions at night, teacher PDs and classroom sessions with the students. I spent 3 days in Perth recently at All Saints Anglican Grammar School over there, working with every student, all the teachers and all the parents, and that's my business, and I'm passionate about it because I want to keep our kids safe.
Absolutely. All right. Susan, thank you very much for joining us in the Tech Talk Radio studios again. It's been fantastic.
My pleasure.
We will have you back in again sometime very shortly. Dr. Ron's trying to get a word out here.
And happy 25th wedding anniversary for tomorrow, Susan, as well.
Thank you very much. Yes, 25 long, wonderful years.
Oh, no, I thought you said wonderful there as well.
Absolutely wonderful. It was, let me say this, the police force gave me a lot of wonderful memories and a lot of things in 27 years. The best thing it gave me was my husband and my three wonderful children.
Fantastic, Susan. That's good, isn't it? And yes, from the job too. That's amazing. Hey, many thanks again for joining us this evening. And don't forget, you can contact Susan on her website, which she, via email, should I say. Was it? It's salconsultants@hotmail.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. We'll be back with more in a moment. Free TV, I believe.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people. This was never the way.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you're an AAAAAAA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They've also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, you know.
It'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government. Yeah.
I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
social networking can be a useful tool, but you really need to tweak your signal-to-noise ratio. If only there was a way to filter out Facebook and Twitter posts about what my friends ate for lunch, they'd be a lot more useful. I've been lurking on Twitter for a while, but I recently decided to go public because I wanted to participate in the Twitter chat amongst my colleagues at a conference I attended in Queensland recently. While Twitter was an amazingly powerful tool at the conference, it didn't take long to also confirm my worst fears. Twitter is just as bad as Facebook when it comes to inane chatter. Now, don't get me wrong, I love inane chatter as much as the next procrastinator, but there's a time and a place for everything. One of the biggest problems in my line of work is information overload and the risk that you could miss something important because you're swamped with irrelevant information. As such, I've tried to be sensible with my social networking subscriptions. I found Facebook a handy tool for keeping up with a few friends who are otherwise unreachable, but the number of pointless posts I'm forced to wade through is frustrating, and it's time to tone down some of the advanced settings. One of the problems was that I was logged into Facebook using Adium, which is a multi-service instant messaging client for the Mac platform. By default, Adium was telling me whenever someone logged on or off Facebook and kept popping up their status in front of my face, so I felt like they were constantly harassing me with stupid messages when really they weren't. So now I've disabled Facebook and Adium, and I've subscribed to the RSS feed of my friend's status instead, so I should only get one alert when people update their statuses. Already I'm noticing the difference. Facebook emails me when I'm sent a message, which is useful. But it also emails me if someone includes me in a group message and then someone else replies to that group message. Facebook naturally assumes that I'm part of that conversation, but it's like sitting on a bus trying to work with 10 conversations within earshot. I'm looking for ways to stop it emailing me unless the reply is specifically sent for me. I might create an email rule to delete emails with reply to a thread on Facebook in the subject, although I'll have to wait and see if that impacts on messages that are specifically intended for me. As you can see, it's taken some tweaking to find the right balance for Facebook, but the fact that I can interact with it through email and RSS is helpful. The more I can concentrate my communications in the one spot, the easier it is to deal with them. So, when I decided to go public on Twitter, I thought I'd cut things off at the bud. No offense to my friends, but I quickly realized that their Twitter messages generally aren't that important. It's usually the same "this is what I had for lunch" message that they paste to Facebook. I don't understand why people use Twitter as if it's Facebook. I sort of thought that Facebook would be saying, "hey, this is what I'm doing for lunch," and Twitter would be, "hey, here's something important." But no, people just set up Facebook and Twitter and every other service they can find to broadcast what they had for lunch in every possible medium, because apparently I need to know through a dozen different ways that salt and pepper makes a tomato sandwich better. As you can see, you quickly get sick of it. What I really like about Twitter is that you can use it just to monitor specific events using keywords rather than just listening to whatever rubbish people happen to spout. That was how it was really useful at the conference that I went to. Don't get me wrong, I don't hate Facebook or Twitter, and I don't want to be a social networking hermit, nor do I want to shun my friends. But there's such a thing as too much information.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
They said love hurts. I wrote that book. I climbed that wall. I had one look, but you just came around to say hello. The streets were filled hearts, and here was I right from the start, and I lost everything when I lost you. Give it 20.
There was no sky, there was no rainfall. All there was you and your sweet face. But life is life, and things will change, like scenes upon an actor's stage. Tomorrow comes today.
Heaven help anyone who lives near a prison and wants to use a mobile telephone.
We tend to use that terminology sloppily and it can confuse.
Nothing like a woman scorned.
NAB, web junk.
We've got GPS for when you're outside and we've got triangulation when you're inside.
No, I'll do it again later.
That old chestnut.
Let's talk about Goosh. Entertaining.
Though she's not a human, she can act like a real girlfriend.
Informative.
Where are you going to get your iPhone from? Are you going to get a Vodafone one or a Telstra one?
Independent.
10.5's had some problems.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Speaking of nerd conventions.
have to say.
A level of ignorance out there which isn't acceptable.
Mm.
Didn't John Howard drop past to get permission to call an election?
What did you use before Next G for data?
iBurst.
The screen is actually a lot larger than any of the previous iPod models.
We've spoken before about the trade-off between usability and security.
Apple have been accused of an unlawful monopoly.
No, it's not true.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
You know, here we go again.
Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Anyway, let's talk about photography now, shall we? Because photography, everyone's got a camera in their phone these days.
That's all you need.
A reasonable quality. Well, there you go. It's your opinion. Yeah. You know? Everyone thinks that that's good.
Got my 1.3 megapixel.
Comes
happy
in
snapper.
Comes in handy for when you...
And they were complaining about my 2 megapixel a moment ago.
Comes in handy at the pub when you're knocking back a few Guinnesses and you want to send some red-faced images to your friends and colleagues and stuff like that. They're very handy devices. But what if you wanted something a little bit better? There's some really nice little compact devices out there at the moment. Hopefully a man who can shed some light on all that sort of stuff is photographer extraordinaire Michelle Lawrence, who joins us live in the Tech Talk studios this evening. Michelle's got a book out. It's called All of Us. And he took photos of lots of people who now call Australia home, 250 nationalities, plus or minus a few, I think, if that's about right. So, Michelle, welcome back to the show. And you've been on before, obviously. So have you noticed any amazing changes in photography in probably the 12 months since you've been visiting us last and what's now available?
Oh, yeah, certainly. In terms of, a camera's just a computer with a bit of glass on the front of it, you know. So the development really has all been in storage, in power. You know, I've got a couple of 4-gig cards that I run in my Nikon. And now, 8 gig was all the rage. Now there's 16 gig. They'll be doing 32 any minute, you know.
So are we really saying now that it's all about the storage, all about the speed of the cameras as opposed to the quality of them?
Oh, well, I don't think much has changed in quality, really. Lenses haven't really changed that much in 30, 40 years. I mean, there's all sorts of technology that helps lenses be more stable. You know, the big lenses and the lenses that aren't that fast, all the camera makers have got one system or another to make them stable so that you can shoot in low light and don't get camera shakings. So I don't think lenses have changed that much. In fact, I bought a Nikon 2 years ago, the big digital Nikon, and I stayed with Nikon because I wanted to use all my old lenses, which would be going back to the 70s, those lenses, and it recognises them. It's fantastic. So,
isn't that amazing? Because you spend all that money back in the good old days and you sort of think, oh, here we go, I have to change over. It's a bit like getting an iPod or an iThingamabob. You have to trash all your music and re-import it all again. Well, I'm not trying to poke fun at Apple or anything, but just the actual ability to take hardware from one device and plug it into another device in the computer world, that sort of doesn't normally work these days, but with photography it's...
Oh, well, the hardware does, but I mean the box itself, you know. I bought this Nikon D2 XS for anyone who knows what a Nikon is. 2 years ago, they brought out the D3, which is what the D2 should have been. They brought that out last year, and I thought, oh, I might upgrade, you know, I'll just do a changeover. Well, mate, the day the D3 was released, my D2 was, I paid about $8,000 or $8,500 for it.
Mm.
The D3 came out at about $8,000, and the price they were selling brand new D2s in boxes, unused, for guess how much? $1,000.
So that's what you call depreciative.
You know, bang, gone. You know, so that old D2, it's a perfectly good camera. I mean, I'm still using it. It's a terrific camera. But it doesn't have, the first...
So what's the difference between the D2 and D3?
Oh, well, the Nikon were lagging in terms of using the full-size sensor because most digital cameras don't actually have a 35mm sensor in them. They're sort of about a two-thirds size.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit smaller. And Canon were the first to really come out with a full-size 35mm sensor. So Nikon did that. So that meant that you can have bigger files. You can show, you know, you can blow your images up much larger. But really, it's all to do with speed and how quickly they'll record. You know, if you're a sports photographer and you want to fire off, you know, 30 shots or 40 shots and you want to use RAW and stuff, well, the new cameras let you do it.
Mm-hmm.
The old cameras don't. So it's really all to do with the power of the box and then storage, you know. And if you're a sports photographer or a fashion photographer or something and you want to fill your camera with images, you know, especially if you're shooting RAW because they take up a bit of space, then you need the 16, you know, or the 32 card rather than the 4 or 2 or whatever. I don't know what sort of storage you've got in those things, but it wouldn't be much.
So he's pointing at a phone or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, phone. Sorry, mate.
Michelle, when you're talking about shooting RAW, what does that mean?
Oh, RAW is just a file that it's basically in layers, and it gives you a very large file.
So most of us would be accustomed to taking photographs and having the photograph saved in a JPEG format or a file with a JPG extension?
They would, yeah. Most cameras. I mean, and the big cameras will give you RAW plus JPEG, so you can, when you're shooting, you've come out with a RAW file plus a JPEG, so you can look at the JPEG and work with it.
So if my JPEG was, say, 1 megabyte or 3 megabytes, what would be the size of a RAW file?
Probably 4 or 5 times, probably.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you've got if I've got a 10 meg or a 12 meg JPEG, that might blow up to 40 or 50 meg in RAW.
Okay, so that's why you need all that storage capacity.
And that just allows you to blow an image up. So if you want to have a large photograph on your wall and you want it to be 2 meters or something, then you can do it. You can't do it in just off a little JPEG.
But the RAW has no compression on it whatsoever,
no.
So it's the...
It's in layers.
Yeah.
It's the visual equivalent of a WAV file or a CD that's not got no compression.
And it's in layers, so you can do anything with it. So you can shoot it in the camera. Doesn't matter about whether you've got whether you've adjusted it for light or not. You can go back to your RAW file and readjust your light completely.
Yeah, it's a bit like taking the photo again, really, isn't it?
It is.
If you get with the camera, I think you get the CDs, don't you, which have the RAW drivers on them, which then Photoshop and those image processing software can actually look at. And then, if you've been underexposed, you can re-expose it. I think it's amazing.
You can change it from flash to daylight to do what you like. It's amazing. You know, when you sit there and you twiddle a dial and you go, oh, well, I didn't have to worry about what I shot on.
So that's what it would have looked like if I'd had the flash turned on. Or,
yes.
Yeah, okay, that's what it would have looked like if I'd had a green filter over the lens. Or
yeah, I don't know about the green filter, but... The rest of it is,
go back to the Guinness, Dr. Ross.
Yes. Oh, I don't know. I'm not a photographer, so I don't know.
But, you know, even the little cameras, like my daughter just bought a Samsung phone on Saturday, and it comes with a 5 meg camera in it. It's amazing. Mm. And of course, the other real development, I reckon, in cameras has been the screen size, because, you know, the screen sizes are almost that take up the entire space of the phone on hers. It's like where, you know, Polaroids used to be, where you can instantly see your photograph now. And, of course, the bigger the screen size, the better. So you can see it, you know, more clearly and more accurately.
So the back end of a photo shoot these days, when you come back to the office, how much more work is there to do, considering you've got bigger files and...
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's
gone are the days of the light boxes and putting your negs down there and having a look and going, that's the one.
But I mean, I started out in a little darkroom, you know, sort of putting film through, you know, bars of chemicals and stuff. And that used to take forever, and so does this. You know, people think that when you're shooting digital, it's going to be much cheaper and there's no time. Mate, you've got no idea. You spend just as much time at the back end as you do at the front end, probably more, actually.
You're probably spending that time working on improving the photograph rather than shaking a tank of liquid around. Is that fair to say?
The beauty of digital is you can actually see what you've done. If you're in the dark room shaking a can of stuff around trying to figure out whether you've got an image or not, let me tell you, it just takes all the stress out of photography.
Microfen, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's 5 or 10 minutes of shaking a can where you're not actually doing anything to improve the photograph.
No, you're just hoping you got one.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember very clearly.
That's why I've never done wedding photography.
Is that being driven by the viewers' expectations now? Are people expecting more out of professional photography as a result of the digital age?
Oh, I think so, and I think that I think everybody's expectations have risen enormously with photography. I mean, even, you know, I mean, you reckon two meg, is it, on that
The iPhone.
Most people are probably happy with that, you know, just for their little happy snaps. I mean, I'm not, but, you know, most people probably go, oh, well, that's fine, I've got a shot, I've got a record of it. You know, whereas, you know, in the old days of brownie boxes and things, I mean, you just never knew what you were going to get.
Because you certainly hear in the fashion industry, I guess, about people that have been airbrushed and so forth digitally to make them look perfect. And I wonder how many consumers expect that when they get a portrait taken or something like that.
Oh, well, you can do that. Yeah. I mean, there's shops all over town where you can go and get your... I mean, I've seen a few recently where I'm going, oh, gee, why would you do that? You know, they go and get a fashion photographer to do all that to them,
yeah,
and doesn't look like them, you know.
No, that's right, nothing, you know, like the same, no, person.
Yeah, it's all right for a model, you know, because they want to change every time they'd be, you know, every time they're photographed, but if it's you or me, I don't know that I want to look like that. But anyway, and they pay a lot of money for it too, you know.
Airbrushing is a wonderful thing. Warlock on our chat was just saying the new Samsung comes out with 12 megapixels. Are we over megapixels yet? Because have we now got more pixels than we know what to do with when it comes to doing home photographs and stuff like that? Are we now becoming just image heavy?
Look, I think for a long time people get overexcited about the megapixels. I mean, yes, you do want as much information on the you know, in the camera as you can get. But at the end of the day, if the lens isn't very good, doesn't matter how many megapixels you've got. If you're shooting through bloody, you know, plastic and you can't see through it, what have you got?
12 megapixels of shooting through plastic, I guess, really, isn't it? So,
you know, so really, I mean, I always say to people, look, just spend, you know, the most amount of money you can possibly spend on the camera. If your budget's $500, then, you know, try and
spend. So that's the way you should approach it? Look at the maximum you can...
I think it's just a dollar equation, you know, these days. It's just make sure it's the best camera you can afford. So if you can afford $500, make sure you spend $500. Don't think you're, you know, being clever by doing it for $300, because it's all, the value will be there. You only get what you pay for, really.
In your, and I guess at this end of the budget you're talking about is obviously the consumer end, not the professional end. Is there a balance between the electronics behind the camera and the glass? So if you spend $500, is it roughly even between the quality of the digital side and the lens?
Oh, look, I think at that level of photography, it's really all inside the camera rather than outside. It's not you know, you've really got to get into bodies and separate lenses that can be actually attached to a camera before you really start making any difference with lenses, because I think the little lenses, these things, they're probably all coming out of the same place anyway, you know. I mean, why Apple don't bring out a phone or Google don't bring out a phone, I don't know. I mean, someone told me that there's like 250 different cameras out there at the moment. I mean, it's unbelievable. How do you know what to buy? You know, and most people, so the strong brands will probably get there, and there's also a bit of brand sharing going on where, you know, two different cameras have got the same insides, you just don't know. But really, I think at that the bottom end, it's all about technology, and it's all about, you know, how many megapixels you've got, you know. And I think people do get blinded by megapixels, and there's a, I don't know what the cutoff is, but, you know, there is a point at which another couple of megapixels make no difference at all.
Yeah.
You've just got storage issues then. You need bigger hard drives, well, bigger flash cards.
That's why you need the 32 devices, or the 16 or whatever it is, you know, card, you know, because otherwise you just run out of space. And they sell, and the other thing is they sell these cameras with little tiny, you know, 50 KB cards or whatever they are. Why?
Well, the smallest cards you can possibly
get. Why do they do that?
So you have to upgrade. That's why.
They, you know, so you've got to go and buy. Well, I don't know why they don't include the cost of a card into the camera.
You buy at least buy a telephone, you get a 128 megabyte SD card or memory, you know, the Duo Pro cards.
When you think about it,
what am I going to do with that, 128 meg?
Memory is so cheap these days. The difference in price at that end of the market for putting in 256K as opposed to 2 gig would be nothing. I would have imagined at that level, so why don't they do it?
I think Michelle's right, though. Sony Ericsson are notorious for that. They invented their own memory format, so you have to buy their MS Duo Pro cards, and they'll give you a very, very basic low-end one when you buy the camera. And
for two photos, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you have to buy a large
really
one.
It's really irritating. You know, you buy the camera, and suddenly you've got to go and buy a card. You know, well, you know, please, just make it a package and give me the card when I buy the camera.
So we've been talking about professional cameras. Let's pull it back a notch to say the, not quite the telephone or the mobile phone cameras, but just the happy snaps. You know, the one that people seem to get out at parties out of their top pocket and go smile and take a photo and put it back. They seem to be doing a reasonable job these days, don't they?
Well, you know, I bought one last year and I thought, oh, I wonder if I'll ever really use it. It was a little Fuji thing. Anyway, I took some shots. I went off on a motorbike trip a couple of months ago now, and I took it with me because on a motorbike, you haven't got much space. I was just blown away. I thought it was fantastic. Incredible images, and they're really good, really sharp. And the other thing that's happened with the small cameras is the lag time is coming down all the time.
The lag being the difference between pushing
when
the button.
When you press the button and when it goes. And that used to be is why it took so long to get into one of those little point-and-shoot cameras, because you'd press the button and nothing had happened for a couple of seconds, and then suddenly it happened.
That's really annoying with a camera.
Why did that happen? It was the processing speed or something in the camera.
It took time for it to react because it didn't have a very, very fast computer in it, I suppose.
Yeah, just computer power. And that's what's happening again. The storage is going up and the power's going up, so the other thing is I've noticed the smaller cameras seem to be getting bigger again. You know, they seem to be just getting bigger because people actually need it.
Is it because of electronics or lenses?
It's probably a bit of both.
Because they're fixed focal length, those sort of little devices, aren't they? You just sort of move it in and out, walk closer or walk further away when you're framing your shot, don't you?
Well, they're electronic and, it either blows it up or makes it wide. But, I don't know. I don't think the lenses are taking up that much space. I think it's more to do with the electronics in the back of them and how much, and also I just think it's how easy it is to hold. You know, you want it when you're holding a camera, you don't want your fingers getting all over the lens because they're too small and you don't know where to put your hands.
And certainly, even today, we took our kids out for a day, and I said to my wife once we got there, "Gee, I should have brought the camera." She said, "But I have; it's in my handbag."
Handy, isn't it?
Very.
Well, one of the blokes on the rider went on had a shot of one of the guys, and it was a fantastic shot. And I said, "Oh, how'd you do that?" He took it from the car, and he said, "No, I just had it in my pocket." And he pulled it out and just went bang. Mm. They're doing 60 miles an hour down the road. Bingo, he's got this terrific shot.
And I guess MMS messaging, and maybe that's one of the reasons why phones have got very low-resolution cameras, it's so that you can actually send MMS messages and still actually get them the same day. they're not very large. But that was really, I guess, the forerunner to Twitter, which is obviously text-based. And I wonder now, with everyone carrying a semi-decent camera around with them, whether they've got a bigger phone camera or they've bought a pocket camera, whether once the broadband gets better and wireless gets better, whether everyone's going to be sharing photos left, right and centre as a part of "here I am and here's a picture of it."
Well, seriously, I don't know why Apple, haven't come out with a camera, that you put your phone in and you've got not a little, thing that size at the moment. But, you need to think, everything's converging, Now, the cameras seem to have just gotten slightly bigger again. Why aren't they putting phones into the cameras? Why, you're now finding there's video in cameras, like all the decent little cameras have now got some video content as well.
Yes.
I reckon that's a great idea. Instead of approaching it from the point of view of having a camera inside your phone, have your phone, make it a really good little phone, and a spot for a SIM card. We need Wi-Fi. We need them networkable. We need to be able to send pictures from phones rather than taking photographs with telephones.
That's got to be coming. Microsoft had their 10-year wish list thing out the other day. A bit of video, Google it and have a look on YouTube of where Microsoft thinks technology will be in 10 years' time. So it'd be interesting to see what they think about cameras. Didn't see much about it. But
that'd be great, wouldn't it? You snap a little photo with your 5-megapixel, your Nikon Coolpix or something, and then one of the menu options is send via MMS.
Up on your phone or something.
Just pops up, just punch in the phone number and off you go.
We're talking to Michelle Lawrence, photographer, ad agency guru, and general all-round philanthropist too with the stuff he's doing at the moment, one of his ads on the telly tonight. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about the current state of digital photography after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
I don't want to be the girl who laughs the loudest, or the girl who never wants to be alone. I don't want to be that call at 4 o'clock in the morning, 'cause I'm the only one you know in the world that won't be home. Sun is blinding. I stayed up again. I'm finding that's not the way I want my story to end. Silence.
The quiet scares me cause it screams the truth. Please don't tell me that we had that conversation. But I won't remember, save your breath cause what's the use?
Been taken to court for forgery.
eBay was the truck and then Telstra pulled the license.
I need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio.
There's some suggestions. They're all going to have SD card slots in them.
There's a new way of watching television that we're seeing emerge.
I can't give you that information over the phone.
Well, if you don't like it, then don't display the sidebar.
When I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was the what?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
Shut up.
43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was all too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter.
But
or
both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We're talking to Michelle Lawrence about photography and all sorts of things like that. And if you go to allofus.com.au, you can go and see some of the photos that Michelle's taken. Have you been into a supermarket lately? Can you ever buy 35mm film anymore, or has that really become a specialist sort of thing?
That's a really good question. I haven't seen any at the supermarket. I mean, I know that my my lab, where I get all my large prints done, have still got a fridge full of film there, but there's not too much. You can still buy Polaroid too, by the way. For
Polaroid,
Well, for professionals, with when you're using medium format cameras, you still need to actually see what you're doing, and it's actually made by Fuji now. It's not Polaroid, it's just Fuji.
Well, they bought it out or something, did they?
I think they bought it. Well, they've probably bought the rights to it. I don't know what's happened to Polaroid, but so there are. But I think Brian Gracie told me the other day that he said, I think it's like 30% or 20% of what it used to be. It's just disappeared. You know?
I've still got a film camera.
You can still buy it in the supermarket too.
Let's do a straw poll in the studio. Have you guys got film cameras? I have. I've got an old Pentax.
I've got an old Minolta.
I have. I haven't used it for a very long time.
No, neither have I, but I'm keeping it because one day it'll be. I'll be able to put it on the table and show my grandkids.
My old Pentax Spotmatic. It's not going anywhere.
Pentax Spotmatic, mate. That was a great camera.
I totally agree.
I mean, there is still film still being used, especially in the medium format, although that's now, the digital age has actually caught up to the medium formats now, the 2.25 square format. Has now become really digital, you know, digitised. But there is still film, and when I shot All of Us, I shot it on film, on the medium format, and I still think it is still better than digital. I mean, there's no question. If you're doing very large prints, the film is still better. There's just more information on it, and you scan the film, and then it's just all there, and it's just got a beautiful richness and depth to it that you just don't quite get with digital.
Yet. I'm sure it's just a question of megapixels, isn't it?
That's right.
your 50 megapixel camera comes out, it'll do the same.
We've been told not to obsess about megapixels, Graham.
You've argued against your own point there.
No, it depends on what you're doing. It just depends on what you're doing. Like for my prints, which were 2.2 metres by 1.2, the scans were 125.
How big?
Well, they're 2.2 metres by 1.2. They were mounted on the side of the building.
It was huge.
Square. They were huge, and the scans were, I think it was 125 each, so they were very big scans.
Yeah, 125 meg.
You know, it fills a few hard drives up, believe
me. So you shot them on film and then scanned them in?
Yes.
So it's digital and analog, digital and the old-fashioned?
Well...
Analog photography. Silver halide crystals, if you don't mind.
That's right.
When we were doing, we did some tests on the size prints that I knew we needed, and we did, and the answer came back, transparency film scanned was still going to be better than, like the digital, the big digital backs on 2.25 still are only 50, 60 meg.
Right.
I was going to ask about that, the Hasselblad large
the Hasselblad
format
was
stuff.
About, I mean, I went to Hasselblad and asked them for a camera and they just said, piss off. They said, oh, we sell two of those a year, we're not giving one away.
There's a couple on the moon, you can go and help yourself if you like.
They're no good, they're full of little holes by now.
And I've still got an old Hasselblad that I've had for about 40 years. And it's a beautiful thing. It's, you know, the most basic mechanical device, but the lenses are beautiful and everything works beautifully and you just take great photos with it. So I was very lucky I still had it and I could run some film through it. You know?
But their digital backs really aren't up to the standard.
They're still not as good as film. You know, they'll tell you that they are, but we did the tests and there was no question when we looked at the three or four, did four tests, I think it was. When you looked at the strips, we did, you know, these big strips of them blown up to the size we're going to do. The film scanned was about 50% better than the next.
And in the film environment, did you find that the actual stock that you used varied from suppliers? Well, I'm just assuming that you probably would have tried, like a Fujifilm or a Kodak film or whatever it is like that. Was there any noticeable, did you try different stocks?
No, because Fuji actually gave me some film, so we only used Fuji.
See, that's how sponsorship works, isn't it? If you get given something, you use it.
Well, they were very nice to me, and they do make a beautiful portrait film, so It's just, you know, it just
a portrait
sense.
Film. What, portrait. For taking
well, it's just
of
got
people.
Beautiful skin tones and, okay. and it's got a gloss to it that you just.
But that's the thing, it. Isn't it? Digitally and with these cameras, it's. I know with talking to video guys like Noel Jones, who's common to both of us, we know Noel. He spends hours and hours setting his video cameras up so that they actually have nice skin tones and things like that. And that's a skill in itself when you're talking about, you know, setting a video camera up. And that's really what these little snap cameras are. They're video cameras, HD sort of like cameras, which just take a moment in time and put it into a flash stick. So,
well, I mean, the other thing was that they needed virtually no work. Once we had those scans, I mean, there was nothing to do to them. You know, you didn't have to retouch them or Photoshop them or anything. They're just
straight to the printer.
Yeah, I mean, they're just beautiful. I mean, there's no doubt still the transparency film is a beautiful film. It's just that it's very expensive and most people don't want to pay, you know, I don't know what it would cost extra, but maybe that project was probably about 100 grand's worth of film and processing. So it was a big job. You know, and most people don't want to spend, say, on a, you know, if you've got a couple of day shoot, well, it might add 10 grand to the shoot, you know, if you're using a lot of transparency film.
It's interesting. You were saying that these were printed fairly big, and you're saying a metre by a couple of metres, something like that.
Yeah, the size one of the building. You should have seen them. It's huge.
There
were 1.2 metres the width of the machine, so you can't get any bigger than that. But you can go long, you know, so you could go 2.2 by 1.2.
One of the biggest areas of commercial photography, I would imagine, would be photographing for billboards and those sorts of advertising, that sort of thing. Now, that would be a similar sort of requirement to get very, very large prints.
Yes, although sometimes I'm really surprised if you ever get up close to a billboard, sometimes they just... They're dogs, and when they get up
they're
close,
designed to be looked at from a distance. Away, yeah.
But the good ones are, you know, if you look at the big ones, and then we don't see them so much here. But in Europe, you know, they do whole sides of buildings. You know, then you need big images. You know,
Do you know whether those are normally done using film or using digital? Or
I don't, but I would imagine they'd be. I just don't think you could go anywhere but film. You'd be using 5.4 cameras or whatever to, you know, blow to that sort of size.
Oh, okay. You know, so even bigger than your 2.5.
Oh, yeah. 2.25 is pretty good, but or 6.7 or 7.7 or whatever. There's a couple of different formats around that sort of medium range. But when you go to 5.4, which is in inches, you know, the old fashioned plate cameras. I mean, and that's for fashion work. And most of the companies that do those sort of whole sides of buildings tend to be in fashion or cosmetics, you know, perfume, those sort of things. They've got money to burn. Doesn't matter, you know, what's it going to be, you know, a 5.4 shot doesn't matter.
So it comes down again to looking at how people are going to view the photo, I guess. So if it's going to be on a billboard against a freeway where you're going to be a few hundred metres away, probably doesn't matter too much what you take it with. But
Well, it does, but you know, it's only when you get up. Sometimes you look at, if there's too much information in, if there's not enough information in the image, it tends to look pretty dodgy.
But as you're saying, if you're on a side of a building that people are going to walk past, you want it to be good
resolution.
You want
it to be good. You know, I mean, I remember seeing a Gap were building, they were doing a new building in Paris, and the whole front of the building was this giant fashion photo. And it was just amazing. You know, the depth of and the sharpness of the image, even just at ground, and you were walking past it because you were in the street. It was just fantastic. Now, that would have been either a 5.4 or even a 10.8. The old 10.8 cameras, I mean, you know, the good fashion photographers still use those, and they'll blow up. It's not a problem.
Just have this in my mind walking past and someone's little finger the size of a bus just next to you in this fashion building in Paris or something. We've also got to bear in mind too that when we're looking at resolution, you bring it back to a computer screen, which is what we basically look at our pictures on these days. It's just a low-res 72 dot per inch type sort of, you know, display, which I guess is really where I take nearly all of our photos are viewed these days, whether it be through an online news agency service or... You know, just people posting things online. And I guess that comes to the next thing. With the bushfires that we've had in Victoria recently, the photography which has come out of that has been just amazing. A lot of people have taken snaps, just whether it's just because they're standing in this fire front coming down on them or what. Like, I've even seen images recently of new growth in some of the areas that were just obliterated by fire. You know, this great black mass of nothing, just dead sticks with these little green shoots coming up. And by themselves, the photos look absolutely stunning. So people have got these devices, whether it's through cameras and phones and things like that. So is it really making photographers? Are we getting better at photography, or is it the technology that's helping us take photos better?
Oh, well, it's just that you can do it now, you know. I mean, like, you remember that plane when it crashed in the Hudson River in New York? You know, there were photos of the thing, you know, within seconds, and they weren't professional photographers. They were just people with phones, you know, going, oh, whack, there it is. And in those circumstances, I think people have a very large forgiveness for, you know, not very good resolution.
Of course, yeah.
When you do with new stuff. For goodness sakes, TV stations put bloody phone videos to air these
so-called citizen journalists, and they're in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time.
Better one, an image than no image at all.
Absolutely,
And I think there is a big forgiveness. People go, oh, yeah, well, at least they can see what happened, and they still say, gee, that's amazing.
Mm.
But it's not been shot on a Canon with a 1,000mm lens or something, you know. It's just...
But using something like these that we carry every day and talk on.
It's there, you know. So I think, well, the technology, A, is allowing normal people to actually get an image. It mightn't be something you're going to stick up in an art gallery or, you know, sell over the internet.
But then again, as you say, Dr. Ron, if you're in the right place at the right time, you get your camera out and take a snap, it'll end up in publications around the world without a blink of an eye.
That's it.
Yeah, well, you know, well, nightclubs and all that sort of stuff that goes on too, you know. So stuff you don't want to turns up.
Yes, yeah, social blogging, networking sites. So where are we going to end up with photography? Like, if you've got your camera at the moment, what will you reckon you'll have in probably 5 years down the track? Will you still have the same camera, or do you think that technology is going to go so fast and so quickly in photography that, you know, you'll be forced to do an upgrade every couple of years type sort of thing to keep up?
I think it's now into the, you know, every couple of years you've got to upgrade. I mean, it's just like your computer, you know. What do you get out of a laptop?
Two years if you're lucky.
Yeah, well, I think the camera's exactly the same. I don't think there's any difference. The interesting thing is, you know, that D2 of mine it must be 50% bigger than the old film cameras that I used to use, you know, the old Nikon.
So your digital's bigger than your film?
Much bigger.
Yeah.
Is that the batteries?
That's a good point. Yeah, it probably is.
There's a bit. Well, yeah, but see, the new battery in the D2 is not that big. Mm. It's about the size of, say, four. You know, but most of them would have had four. What are they called?
In the motor drive.
Yeah, little A4s or whatever they're called. But no, I just think it's the technology that's jammed into them. There's just so much stuff in there. You know, have you ever seen one of those things pulled apart? It's just amazing. But the body of the camera is much, much bigger. Mm. The lenses aren't any different. Because the same lenses that used to fit on the old F2, whatever fits on the new thing. But the body itself is much, much bigger. So it must just be all the technology that's jam-packed inside the thing. And I think that'll probably... My guess is that will start to come down in size. I mean, Nikon have just released their D700 or something. D70. Well, I can't remember. I get so confused with all the names on all these different things. I was looking at some the other day for all the different models of Canons and Nikons, and I'm totally lost. You know, I don't know what's what. However, the second line, you know, the semi-pro level of cameras now are getting smaller and much more usable for normal people to use, but with the same technology that's in the big cameras. You know, so your D3 now is being translated into, say, a D700 or whatever it is.
At about $1,000 rather than eight, or
It'll be probably $3,000 rather than eight. You know, seven. It'll be almost half the less than half the price. But with most of the gizmos in it that the big camera's got, the D3's got all the, you know, bells and whistles. I mean, see, they've got two card slots now in those D3s, so you can put. So imagine you can put 2 16, you know, cards into the thing, and that gives you 32. That gives you a huge amount of capacity. Huge.
It's a lot of storage space, 32 gigabytes. Yeah. Mm.
And then you'll start seeing video sneak into these things, because it's just inevitable.
Well, there isn't video in the top Nikon, but they're putting video into the and some of the second division cameras.
Mm. Which makes you wonder what a camera is going to look like in the future.
And, doesn't
you know, Apple actually did put out cameras in the digital cameras in the 90s, which looked like a pair of binoculars, the old QuickTake.
Really?
They were made by Kyocera, and then they partnered up with Fuji for the QuickTake 200 at one point. But the original ones looked like a pair of binoculars, I think, because people thought that's what the best hold would be for someone taking a photo.
Yeah, but nobody looks through the viewfinder anymore, do they?
Well, that's right.
You know, you just look at the back of the camera. Mm. I mean, even with the D3, you don't look... I rarely look through the viewfinder anymore.
At that point, you did, so that's probably why it was that
I don't feel so guilty now.
It'll be interesting to see, as you say, that as still cameras and video cameras sort of merge because the technology is common and the resolution might be common, what the cameras of the future will actually look like.
Well, yeah, and see, the other thing is the lenses on the still cameras are so much better than the lenses on the little movie cameras.
Mm.
You know, they're... You know, a good lens, say an 80 to 200 Nikon lens or Canon lens, might have 13, 15, whatever it is, bits of glass in it. I mean, you know, that's, and they're very big, heavy lenses, but they're amazing. You know, the clarity in them, the sharpness, the speed. It's extraordinary. So much more glass in them than any of the little handycam things that you use. Mm. So if you could actually use your still camera as a handycam, you're actually going to get so much better result again. Mm. And you're shooting on a full 35mm sensor.
And the only difference, I guess, will be the audio. So provided you can fix the audio in the...
Well, I'm sure they can bang a bit of audio in there too.
Wouldn't be too hard, surely. Mm. I'd imagine. Audio's easy. It's low bandwidth compared to pictures, let me tell you. Yeah. Michelle, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your knowledge with us this evening. It's been great, the last 45-odd minutes of hearing about where photography is coming from and going to.
God, where does it go?
I know, it just flies out the door, doesn't it? Allofus.com.au. You can see some photos there if you want to go and have a bit of a look, or on a Victorian State Government commercial near you very shortly. once again, many thanks for coming in, Michelle.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week. We hope you've enjoyed the first instalment of the Tech Talk Radio 2009 Summer Series. Just remember the Tech Talk website for all the latest in goings-on of a technical bent. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, me, Andrew, Adam, Justin, Lid, even Graham if you're really lucky. And you can even participate in our web-based forum. Just point your browser at www.techtalkradio.com.au for all the links. Also, a big thank you to our sponsor, D-Link, for helping us to bring the program to you each week. In fact, I would actively encourage everyone to click on the D-Link banner on our website, have a look at the great range of networking products that D-Link has on offer, especially with the lead up to Christmas, if you know what I mean. We'll be back at the same time, same place next week. I'm Dr. Ron. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8pm from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.